Hey there, and welcome to episode 19 of the Better With Running podcast. I'm Zacha Newman, runner of 20 plus years and co-founder of Run to PB, an online run coaching company with a simple goal of getting more people into running with a personalized coaching approach. So if this is the first time you're listening, great to have you on board on a run or in the car, wherever you may be. But yeah, every week I'm joined with my co-host, Matt Davey, who's also a co-founder of Run to PB. And we jump on here, we talk all things running, we interview a range of runners at all levels. We talk to our coaches, we get insights into training sessions and give you some tips to help you become a better, to help you become better with running. Matty, welcome along for another week.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Great to be back on and looking forward to rolling out, and speaking of coaches, looking forward to rolling out part two of Soph's interview. Yeah, you left me in a bit of suspense there, sort of just cut off, and I was like, look, did it stop? What happened there? And then I'm like, oh, no, part two is coming up. So, geez, she made you sound really good, mate.
Yeah, see, she's very smooth on the mic, as you know, does some work with Inside Running podcast. She's been, yeah, and she, you could tell she's very familiar with a lot of the topics she's spoken about, and we get into that a bit more in part two. But yeah, it did keep you hanging there. Sorry about that. It's just, we wanted to, yeah, just give a really broad insight into where Soph's been on her running journey. And I guess it takes a bit longer to get through all that.
Yeah, that's right. And I just like really, she's got such a professional manner about everything that she does. And one of those things that I picked up on was her piano playing abilities. And we've discussed this before about whether we might need to change our intro or outro music. And I was thinking, if you reckon she'd be a chance to write us and play us something and record it for the use on the podcast.
Yeah, that's actually, we might have to hit her up for that. But yeah, it's funny when you, some of these skills and these backgrounds that with interviews over the journey we've had on this podcast, some people reveal some skills that you didn't know they had and can come back to bite them down the track.
Yeah, especially when they bring them up like that. Well, have you got any that you'd like to? I think you used to be able to throw the arm over pretty well. Right,
there's definitely no musical skills here, mate. But just getting back to Soph's interview, and we'll drop into that second part a bit later in the episode, but. Yeah, we really went into some amazing things that she's doing in the running community, and the real focus that she's had on, you know, in particular in the female runners that are coming through the ranks. Yeah, you know, she's doing a lot in that sort of mentorship role now as a coach, as a health professional as well. And it also, like I said, about Inside Running podcast, even shining the light, not just on performances of our, you know, female runners that, you know, really don't get the recognition they deserve, but the health aspects. So, and we'll go through this in the interview, that, yeah, that lack of information that's out there, or, you know, lack of information that coaches and athletes really need to be across, and I guess having the right conversations. We also sort of went down the rabbit hole of social media and what impact that is having on, you know, young females coming through as well.
Yeah, and she's not afraid to put her opinions and opinions out there. That's what I really like about Soph. She says it how she sees it, says it how it is, and she does have some really good insights, I think, that a lot of people find a lot of value out of.
Yeah, and I think just having that experience, both from a professional and an athlete / coach role, you know, you're in the trenches, you're out there, you're connecting with runners, you're out every weekend, you know, meeting different people from different walks of life. And yeah, I think that really helps in getting that messaging across. Matty, this week we released the Baller to Runner program. So, you know, as coaches, we're sort of working recently, and over the last few years, we've had a number of runners that have joined us who have a background, you know, then in a team sport, whether it be a netballer, a footballer, other team sports that have sort of found their way into running. And I think even most recently due to COVID and the issues around gyms being closed, we've found that there is that real movement towards running. So, you know, Matty, you've coaching a few sort of athletes that have now moved across. How do you find that that transition from team sports coming into running, and as a coach, is there a few things that you kind of look out for?
Yeah, I guess the main thing that I've noticed is that the mindset that a lot of the bowlers coming into the running program, and I reckon I had it myself back when I was gathering, a lot of possessions, a lot of kicks, a lot of goals back in the junior days, is that the idea that if you weren't giving it 100% in your sessions, then there was no point in it. You know, if you weren't bent over, hands on knees, wanting to pass out, then what was the point in actually doing it? So changing that perception about your training, that you don't always need to be giving it everything and you know, wanting to vomit at the end of your sessions. Just trying to pull that back and just getting people to understand the importance of, you know, an easy run and not going to the well every session because it's just going to risk injury and overtraining. And I guess that's one of the main aspects that I've seen and tried to make or get people to understand the importance of. And I guess in terms of like running in general in these ball sports, and it's obviously going to depend on what position you play, and if it's a program like intermittent between, obviously with COVID and you can't get out and run out with the team and joining the training sessions, it's going to depend on what position you play, but some games as well, they're going to last up to 2 hours if we're looking at Australian rules. But really what I try to focus on is the fact that, yeah, you're going to get fatigued during those games and during the latter parts of the stages of the game. And during that stage, you're going to have a reduction in your ability to perform skills and be precise in those. So that's such a huge factor. And so I really look at trying to develop the capacity to be able to withstand, you know, we're looking at some players are probably going to rack up 15 kilometers in a game. And, you know, those last few kilometers that they're going to be running, they're going to be hurt and they're going to be tired and fatigued. So if you can increase their endurance and their ability to get through a game through a lot more running, then they're going to be able to execute their skills and be more valuable to the team in the latter half of the stages, you know, when it really counts. So I guess that's one of the things I really focus on, trying to get them to understand that that's why we're really wanting to do these long runs or do these fartlek sessions, do this sort of interval training and that sort of thing. So, and what about yourself? Have you coach a couple of guys as well?
Yeah, I am. And you're spot on about that. I guess that mentality of pushing to the limit every day. And I think as runners, you learn pretty quickly that it doesn't work that way. It's, you know, we always harp on about that overall week and that the necessary recovery days and going to the well on a few days a week rather than trying to do that every second day, every single day. But yeah, and also getting back to the program, I mean, we selected 10K because we really wanted to give people a goal, and I guess it's easy to get running and get into this caper and just go in and just do a run every day, but not really have a direction as to, you know, where they're going in a sense of how they structure the week, what the sessions mean, and getting our coaches to work alongside the athletes, along with the accountability, that sense of community they can also have, is that you aren't alone when you're going out doing a session, you're making it up, you know, on the fly. And I think I've had that with some of my athletes now that have come across to the program, in that they were just going out and trying to run as far as they could around the block every second night or every, you know, and there wasn't any structure around, you know, throwing in a fartlek, throwing a long run, doing a recovery run at a slower pace and being comfortable with that. So yeah, it's exciting to work with all different, you know, runners from all different walks of lives. I mean, you know, to get people across from these team sports to try out running and take it to another level, certainly excites us as coaches to get more people involved in the sport.
Yeah, awesome. Well, you can check out all the details are up on our website.
Awesome. Hey, Matty, this week you caught up with Sammy the Shoe Dog McLean, coach at Run to PB and the guru of shoes down at the Yarraville Running Company. What did you guys get up to and what did you chat about?
Yeah, so always good to have a chat with Sammy. It is, back by popular demand, really. We've had a few requests for him to come across and answer some questions. And, yeah, a couple of things that, well, he actually texted me just before going on. He said, oh, can you send me some pictures of the bottom of your Nike Pegasus shoes and your Nike Turbo? So I've sent him those across, and he sort of analysed, I guess, from the wear pattern on my shoes. And sort of, you know, then also how to know, even using that approach, and how to know whether your shoes have really worn out, and they're starting to impact you and potentially then risk injury. So it was a really good chat with Sammy. Well, let's throw across to it. Back by popular demand and ready to take on some pressing shoe related topics, Sammy the Shoe Dog McLean, welcome back to the show.
Hey Matty, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, and how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, ticking along okay. So yeah, good to have another chat. It's probably the most sociable thing I'm going to do for the last few weeks. So it's good to good to have a chat.
Yeah, that's right. There's not much else to you can't go out to the pub for a catch up with some mates or anything for a little while. It's looking down in Melbourne.
Exactly. So yeah. It's just a bit of footy on the couch, and that's about as sociable as it's getting at the moment.
Yep, and a couple of Zoom dates.
That's right.
Just thought I'd first start with anything that you've seen or noticed that's new in the shoe industry since our last chat.
Yeah, I reckon, just trying to think, when we last had a chat, we were probably talking about the ASICS Meta Racer and the Saucony Pro that had just come out. So, you know, plenty of hype around the super shoes that we keep talking about. But probably what we're seeing now coming onto the market, you know, being the middle of the year and looking more towards the back end of the year, is some of these second tier shoes that a lot of the brands are offering. So yeah, they're all pretty exciting models as well. We're just about to see the Saucony Speed, which will be released, I think, the end of this week. I'm not sure when the podcast is going out, but the 1st of August, that's meant to be on the shelf. So pretty excited about that one. I've also seen a few images of the, I think it's going to be called the Nike Next Percent Tempo. Yeah, you might have to correct me on that. But so that's basically going to be, my understanding is that'll replace the Nike Zoom Fly and the Peg Turbo. So it's kind of like they're putting a bit of both of those shoes into the one model with that. So yeah, plenty of new second tier shoes coming out, which is great.
Nice. And when we talk about second tier shoes, what do we mean, do you reckon?
Yeah, I kind of put them in that category of a fast training shoe. So, you know, your tempo type shoe, you know, so they've got some similar specs and traits to your, like your super shoe, but maybe just a bit of a broader function to how they could work for people, you know, a little bit cheaper. And yeah, maybe they just tick a few more kind of training purposes versus just being a, you know, just your performance race shoe.
Yep. So looking at, they could have, I guess, better longevity.
Something. Yeah. Like. Spot on. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Spot on. So.
Yeah. Because that's
what.
You go.
Sorry, mate. Go ahead.
Oh, just like when I put on the Next Percents, and I'm thinking, all right, if I'm going to do a 10K session, you know, this is probably going to cost me like, you know, $10 or something like that.
That's right. Yeah.
A kilometer. And, you know, you're counting that up and thinking, oh, is it really worth putting on the Next Percents, or should I just, yeah, chuck on something that's going to last me a little bit longer, like talking about these second tier shoes.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and I think for your kind of faster, you know, more kind of efficient type mover, some of these shoes, you know, potentially could even like be a daily trainer sometimes as well. So, you know, as we've spoken about numerous times, there's always a bit of a crossover with how shoes can work for you. And so I think, yeah, these shoes are gonna kind of complement a lot of people, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, looking forward to those coming out, especially like I'm a bit of a fan of the Peg Turbos. And so if looking at this Nike Next Percent Tempos and they're sort of replacing them, I reckon I'll be definitely keen to grab a pair of those for for my sort of tempo thresholdy based sessions.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and the images I've seen, I mean, you can kind of see the AirPods up in the forefoot a little bit like the Alpha Fly. So, you know, like a lot of the second tier shoes, they've got some of those similar characteristics to the super shoe. And you can see that in the Tempo Next Percent. So I reckon if you like the Peg Turbo, you'll probably enjoy that one, Matty.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'll be keeping my eye out for that one. Cool. Are you running in anything new at the moment?
What's in my rotation? So I've been just using the ASICS Nimbus Lite 22 as a bit of a daily trainer at the moment, which I've really been enjoying. I've also got another pair of ASICS, which is it's called the Evo Ride, which kind of sits in that daily trainer, potentially like a tempo faster shoe. So yeah, it's cool to be back in some ASICS. It's funny, I put up a post on Facebook a couple of months ago about my very first pair of running shoes, and it was like a pair of ASICS back in the, I think it was like 1986 or 1987. And then, you know, kind of over the years, the brand has just become a bit less appealing to me, just with kind of some of the models that they've offered just haven't really been what I prefer in a shoe. And I think that's probably similar to a lot of your club level, more serious runners. Like I think ASICS have always made like really well constructed, robust type shoes, those very supportive shoes, but they've maybe lost their appeal a little bit with your runner that likes those kind of like lighter daily training type shoes. But no, it's cool to see the brand kind of, offer some really good models across the board. And, you know, Saucony is probably the other one too that I reckon is similar to ASICS in that, you know, their range at the moment, they've pretty much got a really good offering in every type of shoe, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, you seem to, I've seen Saucony popping up quite a bit more in when people are talking about shoes. And I think that the releasing of that Endorphin Pro has really helped bring them back to light again. Like they sort of, I don't know, just me, or they just disappeared for a little bit, and I'm not completely all the time up to date with shoes, but I just didn't see them that much until
potentially. Like I think in a good way they took their time before they released their first super shoe, and then I suppose off the back of that, maybe they've just put a bit more design and innovation into like some of their other offerings. So you know, they got some really good daily trainers now, some good fast tempo shoes, and they got their, you know, their high performance shoes. So yeah, ticking all the boxes there, and so are ASICS. And it's good for consumers that, you know, like when we fit people, it's great to be able to go back out into the stock room and look up and see like, you know, seven brands and have a good shoe in all of them, rather than, you know, occasionally you might look up and just see like three brands that, you know, they're probably the only ones you're going to be bringing out just because of, you know, the maybe the quality of what you're seeing in the other one. So yeah, no, it's good for the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you a lot more variety to choose from. And yeah, obviously a lot of brands are starting to, or are really trying to get a bit innovative and try some new things. And yeah, it's an exciting space to be in at the moment.
Yeah, it just seems like it's just keeps getting better and better, which is, spending too much money on shoes.
That's right, yeah. Have to take out a loan.
Yeah.
We also, Sammy, had a listener question come in from Sally on it. She sent us a message through our Instagram. And sure. She asked, how do you know when your shoes are worn out? And then can this help in your next shoe selection?
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's a really good question because it's not just a simple, pick out a number and that's kind of, that determines when your shoes are worn. So, you know, if I looked at, say, every brand that we've got in the shop and I pulled out the daily trainer model in all those, in all those brands and the model, industry standards probably tell us that you're going to get somewhere between like 600 to 800K in all those shoes. But there's a lot of things, a lot of variables to, you know, whether you're going to get the bottom end of that 600 or the top end of that kind of 800. So, you know, like the frequency of use in the shoe, your loading patterns, you know, the body mass of the runner, the surface that you're running on, your foot strike. So there's a lot of things that are going to actually influence that number that we kind of use as a bit of a guideline. And I've probably touched on before that like a big part of our fitting process when we're working with runners is like we're trying to get you into a shoe that the longevity of the shoe is going to be at that top end of that range, rather than a shoe that you might, you know, wear out too quickly because of something that's kind of, you know, unique and particular in your foot strike, and you're not getting like a shoe that's kind of withstanding that pressure that or that load that's going on in the shoe. Yeah, so it's, there's actually a fair bit to look at when we're looking at, you know, the wear in a shoe and how we can complement that in someone's shoe.
Yeah, so very like multifactorial. So many different factors that are going to come into play on whether, on the how robust the shoe is going to be and how your foot strike is. And like I sent through a couple of images of my shoes. So I sent through an image of one of my Peg 36s and an image of mine and my Peg Turbos for you to have a look at. And we'll put these pictures and these images for if anyone wants to look up on Instagram. And yeah, you could see there, or yeah, what were your first thoughts when you saw the tread on my shoe and how I've worn it?
Yeah, it was a good kind of illustration of like the shoes and how, you know, how you're wearing them. Like I wasn't surprised when I saw the Peg Turbos, like that's your faster shoe. So, you know, like mechanically, you know, generally speaking, when we run fast, we get a little bit more up onto that 4 foot section of our foot. And that's where I could see the wear pattern on your Peg Turbos. And it was also pretty strong on the lateral side of the shoes. But I suppose what I was interested there with your Peg 36s, which is your daily trainer, it was actually really similar with the wear pattern there on that lateral side. So even when you're, you know, running, I'm guessing slower, your foot strike's very similar to what you are when you're running far. So, you know, if you came into the shop and you brought those two shoes in, I would probably be looking at something in a daily trainer that might, you know, might be a little bit more stable around that lateral side of your foot there, or even something that's like, you know, a little bit more like softer or even more compliant under that kind of midfoot, forefoot, because that's obviously where, you know, the shoe takes, you know, the predominantly, you know, the amount of force when you go running. Yeah, so it was interesting to see that with your two shoes. And, you know, like the Peg 37 is probably going to be a shoe that I would, like, recommend for you, mate, because there's a little bit more kind of meat under the foot there. Like, they've increased the stack height of that shoe.
That excites me.
And that... Yeah, so you might be able to stay in your Nikes. But look, again, like they're all the things we definitely look at with someone's gait analysis is, you know, where are they putting more of the, you know, that pressure distribution through the shoe, and can we get something out of the shoe to either complement that or even just disperse that load a little bit more evenly so they're not just wearing out that part of the shoe.
Yeah, that makes sense. And either that or I'm just running fast all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in that like most brands put more of their kind of cushion and that up through the heel, because I suppose the majority of the population probably strike there first when they make contact with the ground.
Mm.
But in saying that, I mean, there's plenty of people that are more midfoot, forefoot, but yet some shoes, you know, they don't, you know, the feature of the shoes doesn't offer as much up that end of the shoe. So that's sometimes when, you know, you can get a little bit more clever with what we're bringing out for people, and if there's something on the shoe that we can give to that person through the shoe.
Mm, yeah, because I sometimes when I've sort of worn a pair of shoes out, I know I need to look for the bin, but and I look at on the outside of my foot where I strike so often, it's like completely worn out, but on either on the heel or on the other side, it looks like it's barely even being touched, like as if it's almost
new. It would be.
And it's like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm only getting like half of my shoe.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, there could be a better model out there for you for your daily trainer, just so that you do get a bit more of that, you know, that upper end of that 800 kilometres or even more through a shoe. You know, the other thing we could look at from a shoe to get a bit more longevity is maybe the outer sole, so the part of the shoe that protects the midsole.
Mm.
So if you kind of look where maybe the flex grooves in a shoe are, or just some of that protective surface, that can help with the longevity of the shoe. And I mean, with your pegs there, you probably got away with those shoes because both of those models have a pretty good kind of outer sole protection where you're hitting the ground.
Mm, yeah, I've actually worn out some uppers, put holes in some uppers, probably more the when I used to run in racing flats more often. On the outside of the shoes, my foot would be poking out the side of the shoe, or my sock anyway. So
that's interesting. Yeah.
And now I've also, worn out completely the underside of the shoe. So I'm basically running on my sock and wearing away holes in my socks because I've in the past landed so heavily on the outside of my foot.
Yeah, I've got you. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean the frequency of use in the shoe, like that's a big one with the how that's going to impact the longevity of your shoe. So because we're, you know, effectively like compressing the midsole every time we go for a run, it needs a certain amount of time to almost like regenerate. Otherwise, we just keep compressing it and compressing it. So that's, you know, we've probably spoken about in past episodes, that's where the benefit of rotating shoes can come into play, because we're giving the shoe some time to kind of regenerate so that we're not just, you know, compressing it too much every time we're putting it on. So we're giving the shoe a chance to, you know, kind of come back to life, so to speak, and then, you know, then we're going to get more longevity and lifespan out of the shoe.
That's a good tip.
Yeah, and, you know, even things like, I think, was it last episode or the episode before, there was a question about, you know, should you wash your shoes?
Another listener on Instagram messaged us last week. Should you wash your shoes in the washing machine?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely would probably say no. I suppose like the chemicals and that from the washing powder are going to affect things like the glue and so forth that keep some of the elements of the upper and the midsole kind of together. And just the, you know, like the composition of the midsole is probably going to be like adversely affected through, again, like the washing powder, and even things like hot water are probably going to do something to the midsole there. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, like when we're cleaning shoes and so forth, we just use the sugar soap wipes. You know, they're pretty effective on keeping your shoes pretty clean, or just soaking them in a bucket's probably the other thing you could look at. But yeah, I'd probably be avoiding the washing machine if you want to be looking after your shoes and getting the true lifespan out of them.
Yeah, it's funny actually. I saw on Skechers have been promoting a bit on mainstream TV, and then one of their shoes that they actually promote is it is washing machine safe.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, okay. So they're not. They might be using some, some type of upper or something that can, you know, is maybe a bit more robust to washing them. I'm not sure.
Yep, that's right. But yeah, I reckon I'll probably damage the washing machine too if I chucked them in there when they were really dirty.
I mean, just back on the, you know, like how do we know when our shoes are worn? I suppose the other thing we encourage, like in the shop, is almost just subjectively knowing through feel that the shoe's probably not giving you like what it once was. Like obviously when we first put on a new pair of shoes, there's that perception underfoot that it feels like fantastic, but you still kind of want that after 300K, after 400K, like hopefully that feeling of it's giving me like, you know, either a bit of responsiveness back or it's giving me some stable features to when I run. But you kind of know just through the feel that, oh, you know, it just feels almost a bit dead underfoot now and it's probably time for an update.
You're not getting much back off it.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes using guys like yourself and Zaka and Brady and, I mean, all the coaches that run to PB, like, you're also, like, bloody fast and light that, like, you guys are always going to get the higher end of that lifespan in a shoe, just because your foot's on the ground for, you know, only a quick period and you're light and you're pretty efficient with your loading. But you know, for your everyday person, you know, like we want to make sure that they're getting that, hopefully around that 700-800K out of their shoes.
Yep. Excellent. Yeah. All right, Sammy, we've taken up a lot of your time.
You know, for our listeners, if they kind of jump on our website and that, you'll probably start seeing some of those second tier shoes that I mentioned coming out soon. And yeah, they're the sort of shoes you can have a lot of fun in, and you know, they've got a bit of a crossover there of how you can use them for faster sessions and even some races and so forth. So yeah, I'd be kind of exploring them as a next kind of shoe potentially if people need to update.
Yeah, I'm gonna be checking out. So the running company Yarraville.
Yeah, we've got our new website up and our online shop. So yeah, feel free to check us out.
Yep, I'm gonna be looking over. I'm gonna be making sure that's checked out next week or so, because I'm due for a new rotation update.
Yeah, perfect.
Excellent.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks very much, Sammy. Have a good day, mate.
Great stuff there, Maddie and Sammy. Yeah, always dropping the knowledge bombs, old Sammy, with those tips around the runners, you know, looking underneath your runners and getting a real sense of where you're at. And I was chatting to Sammy just before, and he was talking about now that obviously the restrictions in place at the store down at Yarraville. They're still able to take bookings online, and they've got their website up and rolling, which is taking in orders by the day. Sammy's definitely keen to hear more from Run to PB runners and anyone else out there. So yeah, definitely hit him up if you've got some questions, for sure.
Yeah, I know. I'll be doing that later today. I'm after he's had a look at the bottom of my shoes. I might have to. I'm going to have to think about getting a new couple of pairs. It's an exciting thing to do. I love when some new runners rock up when the postman delivers them. Makes you just want to get out and run again.
For sure. Hey, Matt, you mentioned at the top of the episode, we're going to bring in part two of Sophie Fitt's interview. It's a bit smaller, this one. It's only about 25 minutes, just that sec back half of the interview. But like I mentioned earlier, a real passion for helping the running community, in particular young women, shines through in this interview. You can actually, just what she's doing out there from a professional and at a coaching and at all levels is, it's great that she's giving back in that way. She was also really open about, some of the things she had to navigate back in her, you know, 18, 20, 22-year-old self, and I guess what's making her what's driving her to make a change. So yeah, we dug into a few topics, and yeah, I think we probably didn't, we ran out of time essentially to go further into theirs. And I think, yeah, in the interest of delivering more content and more serious conversations, we're going to sort of break that out and do some more down the track with Soph and some other professionals out there that'll come on the show.
Yeah, I'm spot on, mate. No, I think just the more information that is out there around these topics with professionals like Soph and others that we will enlist, we can definitely provide more valuable information and conversations around those topics. And it's, yeah, having Soph on and so raw discussion like that, I reckon listeners will find a lot of valuable information about it.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, but for now, we'll let's roll into that part two and continue the conversation with Soph. I guess I want to bring you back to something you mentioned about, yeah, sometimes, yeah, the training is, it can be boring, but it is a long game and all the rest of it. But it's also an option that, you know, that you can make it part of your lifestyle and that community. And you've been able to do that within your training groups and partners and things along the way. And I sort of mentioned in the intro, you've forged lifelong friends. And that is one aspect that running, it is an individual sport. And there is some very boring 6 a.m. runs where you've got to go out, but there is that release. And then there is that option that, you know, when you do, obviously, in these times, it's a bit more challenging to go and do your group runs. But you've had that role in the female distance running community as a real, I guess, an interconnector, you know, connector for the community. Because I see you around, and I've seen what you're doing in various groups and the people you're associated. And I think you've been able to really bring a lot of people together, and what you're doing also now with your promoting of women's running in and that community and bringing it together. And I, you know, the Inside Running podcast is something that you've been a part of where you're really shining a light on female distance running. But, you know, like running, we need to shout more from the rooftops for running as a whole, but the female distance running, and this is something you're so passionate about, you know, how do we do more to bring more attention to it?
Yeah, good question, Zach. I actually have sourced a statistic from a running podcast I listened to, Keeping Track with Molly Huddle, Roisin McGettigan, and Alicia Montalto. So three American women from two countries, two current professionals, and I think they've got about three or four Olympic Games between them. And they said that, and this they'd be speaking to the American market and the American audience, but female athletes receive only 4% of sports media coverage. And whether that statistic is different in Australia, I would question. Yeah, probably less. I'm not as passionate about, you know, increasing our coverage. I certainly think it's a huge issue. I think it's a massive problem. And I was, you know, alerted to this when I actually sat up to watch the women's, it's not the women's, it's the men's and the women's. It was the US Olympic Trials Marathon in Atlanta in February this year. And, you know, like so many Australians, I mean, I follow the US distance scene really, really closely. And I was really excited for that race. And I got up to watch it about 5 a.m. our time or something. And interestingly, it's only upon reflection that I've realized this, but in my subconscious, because I did not expect them to put much on the women's race, because I just knew they just don't. Like, they just don't really cover the women. Like, it's going to be basically the men. And if we get a couple of snippets of the women's race, it's going to be good. So it's almost like I went in with a default setting that if the women get maybe 30% and the men 70%, and we just quickly get to see maybe where they are in a pack at the start, perhaps what happens during the middle of the race and then who wins, it will be a good day of coverage. And I wasn't even consciously thinking this. This was all subconscious. Mm. Now, throughout that coverage, it was pretty shit coverage because I kept going back to that flag. Mm. But I started to think to myself, geez, the girls are getting a bit of coverage here. I mean, obviously, they're probably getting like 30% instead of like 70%. And there was not that many facts about the women, whereas we knew where every bloomin' birthmark was on the skin of every bloke in that race. Like, there was so much about the men. But I was thinking, God, the girls are getting a bit of coverage. This is really good. And, you know, can't believe this. And then later on, I was actually chatting to Sinead Diver and then a couple of other people, and then they very clearly pointed out how poor the coverage of the women's race was. And it was only in that moment that I thought, I went in there thinking, we're probably going to get about 10 minutes of a 2.5 hour race of the women. Anything more than about 10 minutes is going to be great. And I realized how low the bar had gone. And I was like, on reflection, we never saw what happened when Elafine and Molly Seidel, we thought they broke away. We thought they made a break. They never made a break. I've listened to 5 podcasts of Molly Seidel. They never made a break. Yeah. The other girls just dropped off. We didn't see any of that. We didn't see anything. So what I'm getting at is that the bar is so low that we have so much work to do. And I don't know what it comes down to. Is it because, you know, the networks that are covering these races just only appeal to men, or that the audience is predominantly men, or the women aren't producing, you know, races that are entertaining enough, or which I would argue is bullshit, because the women's racing is very, very entertaining, and there's some very impressive stuff being done. I don't really know what we can do to change the landscape and the problem at the moment of just such poorly covered poor coverage of women's racing. But I don't work in that field, or I don't have anything really to do with the media. And I'm passionate about it, but I'm way more passionate about trying to support and affect change amongst particularly recreational, but sort of sub-elite athletes, and particularly female runners, who I see choosing the wrong or making the wrong decisions around their sport and their training that's having really serious and detrimental effects on their long-term health. Mm. And what frustrates me the most is that they are not receiving the right information, and more, you can frame that as they're not really receiving any information. Yeah. Around the long-term effects that some of their decision-making around training and diet and lifestyle can have on long-term health and well-being. And what concerns me the most is that there are not the coaches in the space, be it male or female coaches, guiding young women and having the right conversations with them around their changing body, their nutritional needs, their hormone health, the appropriate amount of training and exercise that they do, their recovery. They are still being treated and trained like small men, and they are not small men. And that's the place, or the space, I guess, where I am trying to have the most impact that I can have, you know, be it a very small scale, extremely small scale, but conversations with my patients in clinic. And I'm fortunate enough that I have many, many, many young women coming through my clinic, and we might spend 10, 15 minutes on their foot problem, and we'll spend 45 minutes on the other stuff, because the other stuff's the most important stuff. And I'm trying to educate and advise women on the most important things around the changing body, hormone health, diet, lifestyle, nutrition, and understanding that they're not small men, and they should not be coached or advised or guided like they are small men. They need to be, their training, their athletic pursuits, and their journey needs to be paved as they are females and women. And there's so much learning that still needs to be done. But there are some really critical voices in this space who I've aligned with, and I, you know, speak to regularly on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, women in this space who are, I guess, harping on with the same message that I am, of guiding young women and educating them. But then I think it's so much more. I think it's parents and it's coaches, particularly coaches and training partners, so that we can all have these conversations without the taboo and the stigma and the awkwardness around it, so that we can stamp out some of the problems around eating disorders, patterns of disordered eating, and female dropout in the sport, or at the very worst is long-term implications because of the decisions that were made, you know, through adolescent and early adult years that have had long-term effects on things like hormone health and fertility and various other problems. So that's the space where I can affect the most change, because I can see it in my clinic day to day. I can see it in training groups. I can have these conversations with women, no problem. I get the opportunity on spaces like this, platforms like a, you know, a podcast like this, and I can directly talk to my athletes about how we tailor their training to navigate everything going on in the body on any particular day.
Yeah, and I think, and there's a lot to that, and I know we're going to dig into this a bit more, maybe on a separate podcast, to be honest, because it needs more light and needs more time to really sort of break things down, because, you know, this is more than a culture shift in the world of running. There's got to be education. There's got to be new people coming through like yourself, other coaches, athletes need to to become a part of this as well. And I think, you know, I can just as a real small part of this, just from seeing from afar the social media and the comparison culture, and almost it's this sort of dangerous space where, you know, I'm saying this as a male, that where women maybe aren't helping each other out in some respects, and maybe I'm just drawing upon a off the cuff comment around maybe body image and the way that we need to sort of look at how we can, you know, from the top level as role models in this sport, as how do we, and I think it's really challenging because the media doesn't seem to want to celebrate the performances. They rather, sometimes there's a perception that, you know, promoting or the sexualization of athletes, it forces athletes maybe into a space to promote that more than their performances, because maybe they're going to get more publicity that way. And it's a really difficult sort of space to get through, but that we need to have more conversations about it.
Yeah, there's a lot more speaking. You're exactly right. A lot more conversations about it. And I think, you know, the media, particularly social media, will talk very quickly, briskly, without any hesitation about the appearance of a woman, you know, her weight, her size, how thin she is, how fit she looks, whereas they don't, that sort of terminology is not used as quickly or as readily around men. So it's very obvious to me as to where some of these problems stem from, and young girls aspiring to have body types and shapes. And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, in your sort of age, I guess anything between say 12 and 16 entering puberty, and when changes are happening to the female body, and those changes are not in line with this idea or this perception or this ideal of what a runner looks like. So a woman will be developing breasts and her hips will be getting a little bit bigger and she'll gather a little bit more weight around her midriff perhaps, and naturally the body starts to develop fat stores because, you know, estrogen, the female hormone, relies on very healthy fat stores. So the body puts on weight, and suddenly this is not the ideal, and this is not what we've been told is what a runner looks like. For example, I you know, I'm using the distance running. I mean, this is rife throughout all of society, but
yeah,
we're going to stick to athletics here. And it's, you know, it's not what your Shalane Flanagan looks like, and it's not what the next, you know, thin aspiring woman looks like. And so immediately a woman will start to try and alter, you know, an adolescent female will start to try and alter her body shape to fit in with the ideal or the idea of what she needs to look like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, can very quickly some weight dropping a little bit of weight can result in very quick PBs or an improvement in performance, but that's unsustainable. But then that cycle has begun, that cycle of restricting calories, that cycle of overtraining, coaches perhaps celebrating the way she looks,
yeah,
without realizing the underlying problem. Oh, coaches also celebrating a performance because of, you know, what that performance means or whatever. And then suddenly there's this cycle of calorie restriction, completely stuffing up hormones, and then things like the menstrual cycle become either stalled or cease to exist, or there's a late onset of the menstrual cycle. And then right there, you've already got a serious issue with hormone health and the flow-on effect of an unhealthy or an irregular or an abnormal for you.
Okay, of, I found this on the
oh
web
my God, for serious, hormone sorry. Health and the flood.
<She's>, set Siri off, yeah. He wants to have a piece of it, impart some wisdom as well.
Okay, Siri, you definitely do not know about athletics and being a female runner. That was so funny. And yeah, the long-term implications of that are so serious and so problematic on so many levels. Mm. And then of course you've got, you know, perhaps a GP, and I'm not having you got doctors here because I'm a huge supporter of doctors, but you, let's say you've got a GP who doesn't know this space, you know, and is not completely comfortable in this space, and a woman presents and she has irregular menstrual cycles, and bang, she's put on the oral contraceptive pill. Mm. And then there's just this whole cascade of issues around never actually establishing a healthy, regular menstrual cycle for long-term health. And I've just seen this pattern, and I've read this about this pattern, and I've looked into it so much, and I've listened to so many things and had so many conversations around this exact thing of where, you know, it's, then you've just got this whole cocktail, this whole thing of, you know, body image issues, you know, distorting what people are eating or not having a nutritious, balanced, healthy diet containing everything that's needed to support training and life and those things. And then the hormones are out of whack and the mindset's messed up, and then mental health problems. And it's just this cascade.
Domino effect, yeah.
Where what it needs to start with is when a woman is, you know, a young girl is entering puberty or her adolescent years, is having a talk about this is what's going to be happening, and this is wonderful. This is exactly what's supposed to be happening, and you're supposed to look like this. And yes, you can do some running, but your running's got to support your health, and your health has got to support your running, and it all goes hand in hand. And you don't have to look a certain way to be a great runner. You've just got to let your body do what it's got to do, and that's perfect. Whatever it's going to do is perfect. And this is the way we nourish our body, with whole foods that are good for us. And this is how we cook nutritious meals. And this is how we celebrate food, because food is fuel. And this is what it will allow us to do. And this is what we celebrate, rather than this is what you must look like. So I want you to stuff up everything else just so you look this way, and just so you feel this ideal. And then, as I said, it's a cascade.
And just, yeah, and I look, just to tie it all back, I mean, you think back to yourself, and does a little bit of this come back to yourself, thinking back to 18, 20, 22-year-old Soph, you know, running around, coming through the ranks, you know, did you have the support networks in place? Is this the information you didn't have, or you had to seek out, didn't have the right, you know, places to go? And I guess, your passion, does that come from, okay, I want to give, you know, where does this go in terms of like giving that hope for women in that age now coming through, if you sort of think back to what you had?
Yeah, for me, I certainly had years where I wanted, again, control, type A personality, controlling, perfectionism. I certainly had times where, and I probably, you know, I think most women can put their hands up and say that, and I think blokes, I think a lot of guys, and this is why the red S syndrome is so prevalent, where, you know, you get a bit of a sniff for this control kind of thing. And well, if I eat this and I'll look this way and I'll run a bit faster and I'll do this. And I was absolutely like, there's a way that I'm supposed to look to be a long distance runner. Now, naturally I do maintain a fairly sort of light and lean physique. I'm only a fraction over 5 foot tall. Like, there's not a lot of me, but I absolutely got sucked into this world of this is the way I'm supposed to look. Now, fortunately, I had my parents obviously kept a very close eye on me throughout my formative years, and as I was growing up and maturing, and each one of those coaches that I've talked about was absolutely on board with having the hard questions, asking the hard questions, and monitoring the right things to make sure that it wasn't a problem. But I absolutely had times where I was trying to look a certain way, to be a certain, to think that I was going to be a certain runner, and absolutely trying to control, especially when you're not running well, you want to control everything you can, and certainly food intake can be something you can control. Now, I was fortunate enough, I guess, you know, that I never was, you know, particularly unwell with patterns of disordered eating, but I can certainly see where some of the things that I thought, and some of the mindsets that I was in, probably weren't healthy, you know, really weren't healthy. And I had a friend over in the US who pulled me aside at one point and just said, you know, I can observe your behavior. And I was exactly like this. You know, she was actually an elite triathlete, and she was probably about 8 or 9 years older than me. And she said, you know, is everything okay? Because I can see what what's happening with you. And I think that's what happened with me. And it was really interesting when I sort of almost got a little bit challenged on it. And I realized that my mindset wasn't always exactly where it was meant to be. Now, I've always loved food and really good, nutritious, healthy food. So it probably wasn't an issue with severe calorie restriction to a level that it was problematic. And I always understood that if I didn't eat, I wouldn't be able to run. So there was always that high level of good nutrition, but I absolutely had times where my mindset was, am I like, this is a 20-year-old, a 23-year-old, a 24-year-old. I'm supposed to look a certain way and I need my body to look a certain way. And when it looks that way, I'm going to be an excellent runner. And in the process, I myself had amenorrhea, which is the loss of the menstrual cycle, because I was clearly under fueling and completely obviously I was undernourished. And so your body starts shutting down the most, you know, unnecessary at the time, systems, which is reproduction. So reproduction is the first to go. And I had many years of erratic menstrual cycles because my body wasn't fueled enough to have a healthy cycle. But I did not understand anything around the ramifications or the long-term effects of this. At the time, I just thought, oh, geez, this is convenient. I don't have my period. So, you know, no problems with period pain out on my training runs. And, you know, Little Red Riding Hood's not coming on the hill sprints. So this is good. And, you know, I kind of just got sucked into that kind of convenience thing and I just didn't really care. Like, I was like, well, I'm not having a baby anytime soon, so I don't care. Yeah. And I did not understand the long-term effects. And it's only when I regained my menstrual cycle, you know, completely naturally, there's no sort of manipulation through synthetic hormones or the like, and started to look into this more and was like, far out, the implications or the long-term consequences are so, so serious that this is something that if there are women who are like me out there who didn't actually understand it or didn't want to hear it, then we need to share this message in a way that they're going to want to hear it, or that they can hear it and not feel uncomfortable about it. I probably would have felt uncomfortable about those sort of conversations back then. And I would have felt like I was really doing the wrong thing and I was in trouble and I was letting people down. And that's the mental side of it. That's a really unhealthy place to be.
Yeah. So if look, you, as always, and you're you're being so open and vulnerable about a lot of these things. And these are the topics that I know you're so passionate about. I know you're really, you know, and this is what you're doing out there in the community, and you're open to talking to people about it. And this is the change we need. I think we do want to spend more time on this, but I think I just to tie things up, I want to obviously just thank you for coming on. Cause like you mentioned, you know, when you're 18, 20, and it's so tough now for these young people coming through the ranks and having all these pressures. And if you can continue to be a part of the community and be a be someone that they can lean on, I think that is, you know, it is really going to enhance a lot of runners in general, not just females and males as well. You know, you're doing a lot in both spaces. So thank you for your time, Soph.
Thanks, Zach. Oh, no, I appreciate that. And you're probably just like, oh, okay, she's getting way too deep now. Okay, let's just just pull her out. No, I could go on and on. And you've been really, really patient in listening to me. But I do appreciate the opportunity because, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's wisdom that I'm imparting, but I can have these conversations with people in clinic. But, you know, you get to the end of the day and there's only been, you know, a single digit number of, you know, young females that you might've had a chat to, but yeah, I really do appreciate this platform and getting the opportunity to join the team at Run to PB is absolutely one of, you know, the most humbling experiences, I guess, or opportunities that's been presented to me that, you know, to think that a group of people like yourself and Matt and Brady and the team that you've got around you can sort of identify my, you know, wee little experiences and think that there's something that I could potentially or possibly bring to the lives of runners in your community. It's an amazing opportunity and one I'm very grateful for. And I do hope that people, I hope we can keep building this community and people can turn to Run to PB for their guidance and know that behind those programs are people who really, really care. And that's one thing that I really do. I really care about people. You know, as I said, it's really easy to just prescribe a run here and a run there, but there are athletes behind there are coaches behind those programs and there are athletes in front of them. And we really genuinely care. And I'm very excited to be aligned with you guys. And I appreciate the opportunity to chat to you today and then hopefully move forward and share what I, you know, what I know and what I've learnt with any of your runners who want to jump on board.
For sure, Stoke. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, definitely. And enjoying working with you. And it definitely will be hearing from you in the future, no doubt, on here again. So thanks again, Soph, and enjoy the rest of Friday.
Thanks, Zaka. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Better With Running podcast. Great to have you along again, and thanks again for all those that are supporting us with their iTunes reviews. We really appreciate it. Matt and I are just continuing to try and give you the best content out there. So yeah, definitely hit us up on the socials if you've got some topics and some questions that you'd like us to cover. There's a couple of things happening over at Run to BB. We obviously have the Baller to Runner 10K program. All the details are on the website there. And another thing, we dropped a workout or a Super Saturday session that Josh Harris did on our YouTube channel. So yeah, if that's of interest, definitely jump along and have a look at that one. And yeah, for now, enjoy the rest of your run and stay safe.